people and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjo, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, it's Shift and Stare. I'm Brad, and I'm here with my pals, Matt and Aaron. And we're ready to have a great show today, and we're going to get going. But I want to mention something. How many, Matt, do you happen to know how many of the
use your words, Brad.
I'm trying to think of what they're called. The Tesla truck.
Say sorry.
The Tesla Cybertruck.
The Cybertruck. That's what I was
thinking.
The
Tesla Cybertruck. Right.
I kept thinking stainless steel truck, but I knew it wasn't.
Yeah. It is a stainless steel truck. Yeah.
How many do they say they've built?
I don't know how many they've fully built yet, but I have one here. It's here in my warehouse, and I've been driving it, and I'm selling it. And I do not own it. I'm selling it for a friend.
Whose is it?
It's just a guy I know that was on the list for a long time and wasn't sure what he was going to do because he was on the list. And, he got it. And he's actually put a few miles on it. He's driven it up Northern California and Santa Barbara and back. And he dropped it off here. And I took some photos of it and got to crawl around it a little bit and see how it is. And the four-wheel steering and the stainless steel body, which I washed it, by the way, not the easiest thing to wash. It's shaped weird. You got to really wipe down and dry the
big hard.
You have to push on it.
The stainless
dry,
and then
push on it.
Kind of, but the hardest thing is like cleaning the windshield, the inside of the windshield. It is so big and so far. You know, like when you go to like some of the office buildings and you see like the cleaning people there with like the mop, but with like just a rag tied at the end so they can get like an 8-foot reach.
Yeah.
Like a Swiffer. Like you kind of need a like a big Swiffer or Swiffer like wet jet or
they
something.
They need to make
it.
A cyber Swiffer. So
there you go. Cyber Swiffer.
How many do you think they made? I didn't catch that. What'd you say?
I'm not sure how they made.
I'm just wondering because
they're still rolling out deliveries on it. His was
all of a sudden there's I counted 4. Just in my neighborhood, and one of them is black, and it looks a lot better in black than stainless.
It does. Yeah, it's wrapped. They're wrapped in a matte black, a matte white, and I think they have a rose gold that they just announced, maybe something else. You should get it wrapped. The stainless is kind of a pain in the ass. And look, if you like it and it's your thing, then get one because it's kind of fun and it gets a lot of attention. But if it's not your thing, there's not many people that are sort of middle of the road on it. People are like, ugliest thing I've ever seen. Other people are like, coolest thing I've ever seen. So as far as a truck, because Aaron and I talked about this the other day as well. It's like, it's not bad as a truck. You know, it's got a lot of storage in the cabin. You know, it looks like there's no headroom in the back. There is headroom in the back. Storage under the seat. And the bed is decent size. It has a little frunk, not as big as the Ford. It doesn't have some of the more common like truck features, like a step to get into the bed or like the little ladder that folds out on the Ford or, you know, the multi-fold option beds on like the GM trucks, tailgate doesn't really have that kind of stuff on it, but it has a power tonneau on it and it's pretty decent size.
It doesn't have a place to put your foot.
It doesn't to get in the back. Yeah. And because of the angle of the side, like you can't really like reach over the side to put stuff over the side of it.
Can't really climb on the tire because it's so tall.
Yeah.
Well, I was just wondering because I've just seen so many of them just pop up in my neighborhood all of a sudden. I was like, boy, all of a sudden I'm seeing them everywhere, you know?
Well, that's because you live in the Matrix, Brad. You live in the Matrix.
You do. So. And look, understandably, so many people in California where, a lot of people here are the ones who ordered that thing. Probably not a lot in, you know, hometown Nebraska where you're from, Brad, or where you live. But yes, and deliveries are starting to happen. I'm around the corner from the Tesla place, and they're popping out of there like Pez machine, you know, Pez candies all the time.
They look like a Pez candy
machine. Yeah, I've only seen the silver and the black. I haven't seen
Cybertruck.
I haven't seen any of the other colors yet, so I guess nobody's ordering it in satin white or rose gold.
Yeah, I haven't seen those either. But
satin white.
Satin white.
Man, that thing in a solid color must be pretty garish.
I've already saw pictures of like a bright fluorescent green, like the band Poison, like that kind of green.
Yeah.
And I get it. You want attention. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, so many people look at the truck when you drive it around. If I had this thing, like if he was going to say, hey, hold it onto it for a month, I would wrap it with Bravago all over the place, right? And then just drive it around. It would be the greatest billboard. Everyone would be taking photos of it. It'd be a great advertisement for whatever brand that you have. But I don't have it that long, and I don't want to pay for a wrap. I'm just going to get like some blue tape and just write the word Bravago.
That's too bad, because then you could have put like, some fizzy water that's always coming out of the back of it. And you're like, yeah, we're spilling Bravago all over LA.
All over the place. Yeah.
Toxic.
Hey, this is a totally selfish question to our listeners and to my co-host here. Does anybody know anyone down in Southern California that does neon?
No, but it's all over my Instagram. So just go on. Now that you've said it, go on Instagram. No,
I repair neon signs.
It's a good question. I do know a friend that had a neon sign made in their office in LA. So I should find out who.
Yeah, because I had mine made in Northern California years ago when I started Bonneville Watches. And I've got this great porcelain sign that's my Bonneville watch logo, and it used to hang in my main area, my reception area, and every morning we'd turn it on, and it had two colors in it, blue and orange, and it was awesome. And one day we came in, didn't go on anymore, and that was a long time ago, and I'd like to get it fixed so I could hang it back up. So I don't know if it's the transformer or if it lost the gas. It's not broken, but they do sometimes, you know, a seal gets in them or something. And well, a seal doesn't crawl in them. You have a seal that
burns. You know, I had our Cabo Wabo sign restored because it was broken. Mm-hmm. It was the one above the outside door on the Nevada side in Lake Tahoe. And it was so weird to see it after all those years, and it's been sitting at my shop. And then I took it down to Sacramento to these guys. And when I picked it up and it was all lit up, I'm like, oh, the arrow blinks. I didn't know the arrow blinked. And it was like, it was so exciting. And now it's in the museum in Reno. So it's with the Woody Wagon. So it's pretty cool to see it live and functioning again, you know, out of context.
Neon
signs are cool.
Such a great art. And, you know, when you think of how prevalent it was back in the 40s and 50s and some of these giant neon signs. And now that I've kind of delved into neon a little bit just to understand how my sign works, I understand how much power those huge neon signs must have used.
We've seen so many neon signs, restored pop up like during the memorabilia part of Barrett Jackson. So
Like
there's probably some listeners of
that's what I'm saying. There's probably somebody that could do it. That's
a little bit about it. Yeah.
But you know, you look on the internet and stuff, and a lot of them are, you know, hey, we can get you a neon sign. And they're the ones that come in from China, and they're not real neon, or they're just, you know,
right. Yeah.
I just need a repair. Yeah. So yeah.
But that being said, there are some cool looking neon looking signs that are now probably like LED and other technology, you know, low draw on power, really cool for a reception area, kind of the same effect. They're taking that technology and making it look retro, you know?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey guys, you know, we spoke about this a while back on the show. about Hot Rod Magazine, that they went quarterly, which Hot Rod has always been, as far as subscription and sell through, the largest, you know, automotive publication that there was. It just had phenomenal numbers and always did. And, you know, then with the newsstands going away and with people not buying magazines, they succumbed and their quarterly. And their first quarterly issue just dropped spring 2024. Oh. And I speak of this because it was very interesting, their cover subject matter. And their cover subject matter was Pro Street, the rise, the fall, and the rise again of Pro Street cars. And I read this kind of half chuckling because, first of all, the cars they have on the cover were great choices because Matt and Debbie Hay out of Arizona, who have this pink Thunderbird that was made into model kits. It was made into Hot Wheels. It's been on all kinds of commercials and ads. It was even in a Taco Bell commercial, I think it was, with some rapper because they wanted a car that was really bright. And the other car is the J2000, which was super famous because this car, when it showed up at the Street Machine Nationals back in the 80s, the guy had made the chassis out of polished stainless steel. He's way ahead of Elon Musk. No, but and, the entire Pro Street chassis, the cage, everything was welded up in his garage out of stainless, and then he polished it. And then the car had this crazy motor and, you know, the paint on it and everything. It was kind of the epitome of the top level of Pro Street back then. Fairground, you know, pro stock cars, you know, is what we always referred to them as. But I loved this era. Of course, I had a couple cars, helped build a couple cars. And it's funny because they say the rise, the fall, and the rise. Okay, the rise has been coming back because these cars are somewhat affordable, because when you think about it, there were thousands of Camaros and Chevelles and Mustangs that were, you know, made into these Pro Street cars, narrowed the rear end, cut the floor pans out. And when they went out of vogue, they just kind of got pushed into a garage or a warehouse. And they weren't really the kind of cars that you could go, oh, I'm going to go restore that, because it was so heavily modified. You know, it was, the motor was gone, the trans was gone, the floor pans were gone. And I saw it starting to happen during the pandemic. And I think I mentioned it to you that these cars would have had 15 by 15 inch wheels on the rear. And I started getting calls from people that wanted to make them a little bit more modern and drivable and put 20 by 15s on the back or 20 by 12s on the back. So I kind of saw some of it happening where guys had these great cars. They just wanted to upgrade the wheels and tires, maybe put an LS in them. And
yeah,
but don't you guys think that some of the rise, the fall, and the rise is because of editorial? Because if the editorial comes out and they're on the covers and they're featuring them and they're talking about them, yeah, people are going to go pull them out of these warehouses, pull them out of these garages and go, I'm doing one, you know?
Oh, sure. It's a reminder.
Yeah. Well, I mean, media. Yeah, that's how the media works, right?
That's right. It's like fashion. It's like anything, you know?
Yeah.
I have that shirt.
You know, I mean, but it's,
I'm going to wear it.
But these cars were fun because they had big motors. That's really what they were. They were fun. They weren't practical. Although I'm going to post a photo on our Instagram page later today, and this blew me away, and it goes right along this whole discussion. I'm leaving work the other night. It's about 7 o'clock at night. Sun's going down, and I hear coming up behind me a rumble. And, you know, you don't hear this on the streets anymore out here in Southern California. Used to be all the time, but I hear this. Bruh, 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 bruh. And I'm like, wow, is that a pack of dogs? No, it's a
it's a cyber
car.
Truck.
And yeah, super truck and off-road.
Is that the new Borla exhaust?
Yeah. But I look in my rearview mirror and I catch a glimpse of a Pro Street Vega, bright red, it comes pulling up alongside me. And first, I'm impressed as hell. He's got like 3315s on the back, wheelie bars, a big snorkel scoop.
Yeah,
looks like an old 70s era pro stock car, you know.
Bright and a Vega. Red. I mean, had you said like a Tri-5, you know, Chevy or something, but like, yeah, a little more common.
Right.
You know, yeah, the Vega, it's cool.
How do you top it? That thing being driven on the street, he did it. He topped it by making a hard right and merging on to the 91 freeway. And I was like, there goes that Vega with the giant tires, the wheelie bars, and he merged onto the freeway. I was like, oh, good for him, man, you know? And that was so cool. And it was like, it was right after I had just seen the new cover of the Hot Rod magazine. I was like, all right, guys are pulling them out. This is awesome, you know?
Maybe he got the magazine in the mail. He's like, we're back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going over to my girlfriend's house to show her. See? You know? Yeah.
And at the merge line, he's like, ooh, go, 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 go. Takes off, you know, down the strip, right?
It's interesting because so many of those cars were built, especially with the big blower cars and the bug catcher coming out of the hood, and they just didn't run well. It was difficult to get them to like idle and be drivable. Still to this day, a very cool engine that Nelson Racing Engines builds is they build a I think it's a big Chevy with like an old school blower and a bug catcher on it.
Yeah, like a 671.
Yeah, but it's all kind of modernized internally. And like the three holes in the bug catcher, he's got it that I think the outer two ones are sort of simulated and the center one is a throttle body. And so it's tuned into a single throttle body instead of trying to tune around three, you know, in that instance. And he makes a very, like, very streetable engine, but with that look, and it's crazy.
Every year there was somebody that showed up when spring rolled around, you know, like our cars was 671 Dyers blowers back then. We used Dyers and we would run them like 1-to-1 so that you could run them on the street. And that's the pulleys, you know. You'd have some guy who'd come in with his blower overdriven and it'd be screaming and it's looked and sounded great. But like you said, Matt, the car, as soon as he pulled up to it didn't idle. As soon as he pulled up and stopped, it would stall. Or, you know, or there were the guys back then that had the real Hildebrand injectors and they would have to get out when they left, you know, the burger stand where we cruised, and they'd have a white squirt bottle. And they'd prime the injectors so they could get the car to start. And see that anywhere anymore. That was the kind of stuff that was on the street.
Wow.
back in the day, you know, back in 1996. So I was 15.
A minute ago, Brad, did you hear any audio glitch on Matt when he was talking?
No. What happened?
No, I didn't hear it either.
So I'd be curious on playback, folks. Let us know if you hear the devil. Matt, your voice split and you could hear your voice. And then underneath it was this. It was like this slow down.
I didn't even hear voice. That.
Maybe
the devil's on your shoulder.
I've been meaning to tell you guys, but I'm part demon. That is my demon voice.
I'm telling you,
have that Ouija board in your car.
No joke. Yeah. It was a couple seconds of a very subtle split. Oh, that's why I got bug eyed. If you both looked, I got bug eyed.
I saw you. Like, I saw you. Yeah.
I was like, whoa,
you were just
cool.
Getting gassy.
Yeah, exactly.
How'd you do that?
The dog was biting on you or something, nibbling on your ankles. Hey, so that's sitting right next to this Vega at the intersection was a Fisker SUV, the Ocean, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Great looking vehicle. I've always liked them. And I love what you know, Fisker does. He really has a good design eye and their cars seem quality. But as we mentioned a couple shows back, having some serious problems, and it got worse for them. It came out that they have retained a firm to explore bankruptcy, a Wall Street firm. Now, for some of you who might think, oh, they're gone. No, that doesn't always mean that they're just belly up. It means that they might have to bring in a partner. They'd been speaking with Toyota and like that about trying to do something. You know, so you don't know what that means. But what's really bad for them is a stock that at one time was at $20 is down to 14 cents at one point.
Oh, gosh.
That could bring a delisting, which could really, really, you know, destroy them. And not to mention, the same article mentioned that they have, they tried to do the Tesla direct-to-consumer type of sell of their vehicles. And I think everybody just thought they could jump right on that in today's internet community. However, it didn't go as well for them. And they're sitting on $500 million in vehicles that are unsold.
Jeez.
So,
wow, that's too bad.
Have you heard anything else about
this? They don't have the
this?
Sales. And the other issue is the cars aren't really done. They have software issues and they keep promising customers software updates and they're struggling with it. This kind of came up in a conversation the other day. They're kind of knocking on the door of like lemon law issues because they don't have the right software updates. And typically we're like, oh, this is a mechanical issue and it's a lemon law, but software is a big part of these cars now. So
yeah.
It's kind of it's kind of interesting. And then this kind of led to a broader conversation with these startup EV companies, you know, Tesla,
right.
Lucid, you know, Rivian, Fisker, and some of the ones that
and there's
aren't
even
really,
more. They just go
yeah,
on.
Yeah, Mullen and some of the other Bollinger and some of the ones that haven't really taken off yet. But if these companies go away, like what? You can't get parts for your car. If you think of the Fisker Karma, the first Fisker from years ago, and those have traded a bit at auctions already. But what happens if that car breaks? If it's a mechanical issue, sure, you could probably get something or make something. But what do you do with battery technology and software issues?
Yeah, even worse than a mechanical part, you know, a wheel or something, you could, if you have the money, you could replace it. But like you said, a battery, or worse yet, what if your ECU, your whole brain goes, you know, now if the brain goes out in your truck, you go down to the dealership and you get it. And this is what's changed. It used to be that manufacturers were required to have 10 years of spare parts.
Mm-hmm.
On every vehicle so that you didn't run into that problem, you know?
Listen, the Nissan GTR, the 2025, they announced that's going to be the last of that car. Now, listen, it's been around for a long time. It wasn't going to last forever anyway. And they've done revisions. But it just came down to, they said, we're just not going to have enough parts to maintain these cars.
Yeah.
So we're going to stop making them, and whatever parts we have will be used for replacement parts. And then that's it. And they're going to limit to like 1500 models or something next year. Like, you know, that's the issue. Listen, Leno had a video the other day about some steam powered car that he had. And this was one of the coolest cars. And it was, you know, you can turn a key and it would fire up. And he goes, but when we rebuilt this car, you couldn't get anything. We had to rebuild. We had to make pistons. We had to make.
They literally made every single rods, part and right? a little yeah. better. They went to what the NASA to make parts too, right? Like that,
you know,
little.
Yeah,
I think the throttle assembly, he had to have like NASA build it.
But what do you do if it's software issues or something like battery technology? It's just like, it's kind of a tough.
And
tough
well. I'll tell you, you buy a bunch of Hot Pockets and you find some kid who's got a laptop and a microwave, and you give him a stack of Hot Pockets and you go get this thing running again.
He's going to need some Rockstar too to keep going. So
Rockstar and Hot Pockets.
and this is just speculation. I'm not disparaging Fisker at all, but you know, this is where once you start having money issues on scale like that, it could be maybe they owe a supplier who did the programming and they're like, you're not getting any more until you pay your bill, or an employee that, you know, left or something. You know, it's like that with any company when it's the dominoes that start falling, and it's very hard to recover, especially when the popular press and everybody is saying the downfall of the e-vehicles right now. And, you know, you turn on the business news and it's everybody's sales are down. Everybody, the U.S. consumer and the consumer worldwide is not as into the, that's a real hard sell when you're, you know, having issues. So we'll see what happens, but just wanted to bring it up as kind of an update. And it made me think about it also because I saw that car on the road. Great looking car. But like you said, Matt,
I had high hopes for the Fisker. They outsourced the production to Magna that builds the G-Wagon and some other cars. And I like his design. And, you know, they seemed like they were pretty well funded. And, you know, maybe they didn't have to go public. The reverse SPAC thing was their direct listing was a little odd. We didn't really think those were going to go that great. But yeah. And as we're looking at it now, stock price is 17 cents a share. Not a lot of faith in the company. Like Hendrik Fisker was a billionaire at one point, you know, year ago on paper, he was a billionaire because of this company and they didn't even have a car out. I think it's a topic for another day, but some of these companies just get a little too far ahead of their skis. They're like, we're going to build a car and we're going to go public and we're going to be worth $8 billion. Like, but you haven't sold any products yet. You know, you have zero revenue. As a matter of fact, you're burning through tens of millions of dollars, you know, a month.
Everyone thinks they can start a car company, and we have seen it for millennium. I mean, it's just, you know, how many supercar companies have come and gone that had the financing, that had the, it just, you know, it is a momentous task. I mean, everybody bags on Elon Musk, but he's kind of one of the only people in modern times that actually created a car company that is an ongoing entity. And even that has its issues and its faults and its, you know, trying times. And he almost went bankrupt how many times, you know? I mean, it's...
It's kind of a little renaissance right now, if you think about it, because look back in the turn of the century when a new product came out to the world, which was a car, and how many individuals jumped on the bandwagon of building all these different cars. Some were steam, some were electric, some were, you know, petrol, some were other things. And we're kind of going through that now, I think, with the electrification of everything, is that there's kind of a bit of an automotive renaissance, and that all these manufacturers are going, this is a great idea. We got to be innovative. We got to come up with something new. I mean, I don't know. History repeats itself. I think it's kind of repeating itself right now. And we're seeing them fall by the wayside, the ones that can't hold up, you know, right?
Well, that's true.
Your example with Tesla, even Tesla, they have, I think it's a couple billion dollars of revenue of them just selling their whatever, their clean air credits. I forgot what the actual
term
is, like their carb credits.
Yeah.
To other manufacturers. But like when you start to look at their revenue, almost, you know, $97 billion a year in revenue, but how much of that is from the vehicles? I'm sure a significant portion, but it's not the only thing that they have. They're definitely got their paws in.
They have flamethrowers and, you know.
Yeah, right.
Everybody remembers the
solar panel.
It's it's a task that is just, you know, just there's so many moving parts, and not even trying to be funny. I mean, there's so many moving parts, so many suppliers, so many things that are critical, and governmental agencies. And when you go international, you're dealing with so many, you know, things that it's just, well, look at the original Fisker and how that unwound because of just a few things that were out of anyone's control, you know, where they offloaded the cars off of a ship in, where was it, in New York or New Jersey, and they get put on a rail cars to be transported out to California. They brought them off the ship. That big hurricane comes in, flooded all of the cars, and there is this strange transport insurance law that if they're not on the ship and they're not on the train, they're not covered. So, I mean, what'd they lose? It was a phenomenal amount of
vehicles, I don't remember.
You know, and it put them out of business. You know, it's
and a battery supplier for the Fisker Karma.
Right. I think
the company called A123. Like that company went bankrupt, and they couldn't get their technology.
Right.
I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing, but
it's like, you know, it didn't matter. You're dependent on a lot of different things. We don't talk a lot about Good Guys Rod and Custom on the show, just because it doesn't come up. We haven't been to a lot of their events. Of course, they could invite us and we could do a podcast from there, and they could put us up at a hotel and, you know, really treat us good. Just for everybody, just so you know, there's one coming up in Del Mar, California. And I bring it up because it's right down the road. Have either of you guys been to the Del Mar Good Guys before?
No,
I don't think so. I've just been to Pleasanton one, I think.
Yeah, it's really unique. I've gone to it a few times. And I've even taken one of my cars to it once and entered it. But it's at the Del Mar horse track, which is literally on the ocean. I mean, you look over the fence and it's the ocean. The only thing between you and the ocean is Highway 101. So it's picturesque. It's really unique. And that one's coming up April 5th through the 7th. They normally have about 2,500 cars. I know this year, you know, as always, they got a huge manufacturer's midway. They do the swap meet. They have autocross. This year they've added what they call the Lowrider Palace. So they're having a big lowrider exhibit and a vintage dragster exhibit in another hall. So it's definitely worth one if you want to come to California and make a vacation. It's a pretty cool show. I can say, since I've been there numerous times, it's a great one and in such a unique location. You know, I mean, and you know what? It's cars, trucks, and hot rods. That's, you know, Good Guys made a great choice years ago when they upgraded to 72 and older. Then they bumped that up a little bit more so you could bring your 80s cars. And now it's cars and trucks and hot rods. So it's a pretty well-rounded show for everybody.
It used to be close to Goldberg's place, so he's been down there a bunch of times over the years.
I've actually run into him down there before.
Before he moved to Texas. So he was down there a handful of times and always loved the event. So, it's cool.
Oh, it's a cool one.
I guess Von Hot Rod and a bunch of others will be taking their vintage dragsters off their wall and taking them to the event.
I could take mine off my lift in the back.
I was going to say, Brad's got one like hanging in the ceiling or something, like a Moon-Eyes dragster or something in there.
That needs to be seen.
Yeah,
that needs to be seen, Brad.
The last time I took it out was where was the show? It was the Miramar Air Force Base. My brother, when he ran the stuff down there, he asked me if I'd bring it down, and I loaded it up, took it down, and this, my brother hasn't lived in California for, I think, 10, 15 years. I don't know. And I cleaned it up, drug it out down there and put it in the middle of the street. And oh, my God. People were freaking out.
Oh, yeah.
Got the front-mounted potted blower.
Cool. You can't be harboring that in your little shed, man. You got to bring it out in the world.
All my cars, they just get squirreled away. And
I know.
For me. I'm like that guy that you go, he didn't have some nice stuff, but he never brings it out. You know, does he really have it?
Speaking of critters, man. So I was detailing my brother's car because he sold it and he did get the GX or GL 460 Lexus, right? The SUV.
Oh, a new one. Yeah.
We pop his hood. And there's a big white fur ball in there. And then yesterday, I was looking at an Airstream that a gentleman wants me to help him go through and design the interior for, and I'm showing him the Defender, and I open one of the drawers and there's a big old nest in there and tissue paper everywhere, and I'm like, what the hell? Like, I drove that car and detailed it 2 days ago. Yeah, it's springtime. The sun is out, the rain has stopped, and the mice are making little nests to have little babies everywhere. So check your stuff, folks. It's that time of year, at least in California.
Yeah. Don't want them chewing on your wires, man.
Did your brother get the brand new Lexus?
He got a 22, I think, or 20, yeah, 21 or 22. Pretty new. It's got 17,000 miles on it.
The brand new one is the redesigned one that's shared with the 4Runner. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think that one was a little much, but
yeah, they start at like 65 grand or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You talk about Airstreams. I don't know if I've ever mentioned there's a guy, it's not in my neighborhood. He's probably, I don't know, 4 miles away from me, but I drive past his house quite often, and he's an older guy. And I see him out there. He's got a big, like, half moon driveway, and he always has at least one Bronco that is totally restored, but bone stock, not lifted, not anything, just restored. Like it just rolled off and when he has his garage door open, there's always another one inside being restored.
Wow.
But he also does the polished Airstream type trailer restorations.
Wow. But
then I was going by one day and I went, wait a minute, I don't think this guy's doing restorations. He's building them. And I see him out there. He's got the wood frame that he's actually building in his driveway.
Got a buck out back.
Then I go back and I see the ribs, and then I see him start skinning it and he's cutting it. And I'm like, and then you'll see like one half finished and one completed in his driveway. And then you'll see somebody hooking up. He must, build, but he does them right in his driveway. And I mean, this guy's a craftsman, and he's got a little bitty 2-car garage, and he does everything else out in his driveway.
Shows you don't need a big shop and a bunch of shit. Yeah. You just need some skill.
That's right. It's a lot easier in a big shop with a bunch of shit, but
I don't know.
But you can have all that, and if you don't have any skill, you're not going to be doing it. You know.
I wonder if his HOA is pissed. And what's that town in California where they won't let you work on your car in your own garage?
Oh, most of them.
Yeah, it's all those gated communities. Well, where I used to live down in Newport, it wasn't even a gated community, but we had a community, because we had a pool and stuff. And we had this stupid rule that you could not have your garage door open cumulative amount of 20 minutes each day, each 24-hour period. So in other words, you were supposed to open your door, pull in, close it, and then when you left. And, me, I had like
a ridiculous.
And I would be taking and my I had this one old neighbor, he'd come over, he'd go, you have your garage door open all the time. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, and he'd remind me of the rule. And I was like, come on. I said, the garage is clean. It's not that big a deal. I got two nice cars in here. But, it's just.
That is ridiculous, kind of man.
Right? Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I hate HOAs.
It's actually a big.
I would never move in a place that had HOAs.
It's actually a big issue that we talked to Mike Spagnuolo about at SEMA, about the right to work on your own car.
Yeah.
They're fighting all kinds of stuff going on in DC on that. They don't.
Speaking of Mike Spagnuolo. So yesterday I was driving with my friend because we went to look at this trailer because it's a buddy of his. And I was talking about Mike and how we should go and visit, the SEMA garage when we're down there and blah, blah, blah. And he points up and I go, fucking CARB. And I start yanking the chain on CARB. Right. He goes, what do you mean? So-and-so is one of my buddies. I've known him for a long time. I'm like, the head of CARB? He goes like, yeah. And he points to the top of the hill above our house. And he goes, that's his garage right there. He's a total CARB guy. I'm like, what's a CARB guy doing running CARB? So now I'm on a mission. Like, I want to meet this guy. I want to see what his story is. I want to call Mike. I took a picture of the garage because it's like a white building. And I was like almost ready to send it to Mike and go, dude, let me know what you want me to do. He's right here.
Well, but I mean,
can you believe it? How trippy is that, right? like the president, I believe the president, the top dog of CARB lives right above us, like on the other hill facing our house right now in Napa.
SEMA has a good relationship with CARB. It's just, there's a lot of other.
It's all the legislators that.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what Rick was saying. He's like, dude, it's not him. It's all the legislature and all the politics, but he's a good guy. He's a car guy. He's an old friend. Trust me, you guys would like each other. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Is he a Roth fan too? You know?
There is a new thing going through right now in California, and I shouldn't even bring it up because I know nothing about it, but about that you can't work on your cars anymore, you know, at all.
Oh, man.
You
know,
it's like, that's what I was saying. You can't work on your car.
Do you know any of the details on that one?
Now I got to go back to the interview. We had Mike on CarCast a little while ago, and he kind of got into it just some more. So, it's an issue. It's a big issue. They're fighting it.
Is it an issue with the Toyota Tundra TRD Pro?
It is. It is not. I guess it depends because it depends on where you have it.
Can you tell us firsthand what it's like to be in one? I mean,
would you happen to know what it's like to drive one, Matt?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I've been driving it the past few days.
Oh, okay.
The Toyota Tundra TRD Pro.
Wow, it just so happens.
It is. It's cool. It's interesting. It's. I don't know if it has really kind of caught on like the Silverado, the F-150. They're not quite there yet. They dropped the V8 a couple of years ago. It has a turbo V6. There's a couple configurations on it. 10-speed automatic, which works great. The new edition is big 14-inch screen on the inside that works well and it looks good.
What kind of screen is that?
It's a big touchscreen, but
is it an IMAX screen?
It is not an IMAX screen. It's not an IMAX screen, but it has an IMAX engine, I guess. Now that Aaron's upgraded his Jeep to like the bigger touchscreen, you start to realize how kind of useful it really is.
In my
Lightning, I have it, and now the big 14-inch screen, and this thing is pretty cool. I mean, listen, it's smooth power band, even though it's the V6. It doesn't have leaf springs in the rear. It's a coil spring. It's actually a fairly smooth ride. I'm driving the TRD Pro, which has quite a bit of the upgrades on the suspension, sort of their version of a Raptor competitor. This one has like the BBS forged wheels. It has the off-road suspension. It's a 1.1-inch lift. It's got the Fox shocks around. You can see it's got like upgraded control arms and stuff on it. So it really kind of looks, you know, anodized red. It's got the cool off-road bits to it. This is the iForce Max twin turbo V6 hybrid. So it's got the twin turbo V6, and then there's a small electric motor basically attached to like near the bell housing and attaches to the drivetrain that way. There's no electric motor running it on, you know, powering any of the wheels. And I think it's for something like 48 horsepower for the electric motor. So the total output's 437 horsepower and 583 pound feet of torque. And
what's the sticker shock on this? I mean, sticker price on this thing.
Yeah, it is not inexpensive. The one that I'm driving is about 75 grand.
Yeah.
I think it starts about 74,000 bucks. Now underneath the back seat is normally a storage area and the seats fold up. That's where they store the battery for the hybrid system. And it's a nickel metal hydride battery, which is kind of, a old school technology, you know, a heavy battery. The seats still fold up and stuff, but that's where they keep the battery. It's quick, but what I've noticed is just not a lot of like throttle response coming off the line.
You need a pedal commander.
You need a pedal commander or a pedal monster or whatever they are. But what they're trying to do is use that electric motor to fill in the gap, the power gap at the low RPM as the V6 tries to spool up.
And we also know why that is too, because they've got to meet certain mileage standards, and that helps do that.
It does, but barely, because at the end of the day, when they crunch the numbers on these, they're like, it's really not a huge gas savings, you know, fuel savings on these vehicles. Like, I'm averaging something like 15 miles per gallon, 14 point something miles per gallon. It's not. So I don't know. It's really making that much difference compared to the V8 that they had before. But, you know, aside from that, it's a comfortable truck. The suspension seems to work really well. The off-road, the TRD Pro is, you know, I haven't taken it off-road yet. I just kind of got it. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get to it, but I'll get photos to kind of show you what's going on underneath it. And it's got some good bits to it. But I don't know. I mean, is it better than what's out there with some of the competition? Not necessarily. But
I don't know. You're driving it. We're not.
Yeah. you know, but look, it stops well. I want to say, you know, the 60 to zero was like 131 feet. And for a truck that size, that's pretty good. And it's pretty comfortable. Kind of like the Cybertruck, it doesn't have all the cool, nifty, like tailgate options. It's pretty conventional. It opens with the click of a button, but you still close it manually. It's light, but you close it manually. Anyway, it's a cool contender. And if you like the look of it, then by all means, take a look at the.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm a little bit old school when it comes to my trucks. And
yeah,
I kind of look at it like, if I've got a work truck, I don't want all those bells and whistles on my tailgate and everything, because it's more that can go wrong. If you're, the more dirt you haul, the more sand, all those little motors, you know, I know they're sealed. I know they've checked it all out, but it just seems like, I would rather see like here's the base truck with a regular old tailgate. Now, if you got your, you know, weekend truck or your truck that your wife drives, or I shouldn't say your wife, your significant other, you know,
your wife.
I don't know when wife became a bad word, but okay.
I know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like, damn. But anyways, I don't think you always need it. So if the Tundra's a good looking body style, I've seen one on
it is. It's got a massive grill in the front, and the TRD Pro is cool. It has the integrated light bar, the LED light bar right in the grill, underneath the giant Toyota logo. And it's a cool looking, it's definitely a cool looking truck kind of overall.
You mentioned the light bar.
Yeah.
Okay. The Cybertruck that you have in there.
Yes.
That big bar light are the daytime running lights, correct?
Yes.
Does it have two lights lower for nighttime?
No.
Okay. That's what I, because the one that I saw maybe it kind of does. Night,
yeah.
This thing, you could not see anything. The light bar was on, and then there are these two giant lights down low.
Yeah, it does.
And they were at a height, and they were so bright that I couldn't see anything else in the intersection. It was horrible.
Well, it's also on an air ride suspension, so it depends on what mode and what ride height they're at. And like this one here is set up that when you turn it off, basically it lowers so you can get in and out of it kind of easily. But I haven't even driven it at night, so I haven't even really noticed the.
Well, it was the first one I ever saw at night, and I was just like, I have it.
Yeah, Brad, I'll tell you, I get flashed every time I drive the Jeep at night.
Right, because you got it
near San Francisco.
Yeah, but I took it to
Jeep. Oh, you're talking about headlights.
And I had to measure it, and they said everything is at the right height. The headlights are not adjustable. It's the LEDs. The new lighting is just bright. And it's. I know it's obnoxious on the other side of it, too, but all the time I just flash my lights back, and then they put their brights on. I'm just like, dude, come on. Like, this is a stock truck. This is how life is now.
When I'm driving my Yukon XL around with the high beams on, I get flashed too.
Yeah.
But I'm not driving with my high beams on. No, it's, you know, trucks. It's not cars. It's trucks. Trucks are big. Trucks are tall. And these LED lights, they shine differently, man. They blind the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Especially if you're old.
No, they do. The Teslas, all have very bright headlights and, you know, and you know what? The other thing, how many times do you see people driving at night and you're coming up on them and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, there's a car there. They have no lights on.
Yeah.
Their daytime running lights they got in. I've done it several times with rental cars.
Yeah.
You know, you get in and because I keep mine on, you know, automatic where they just go on at dusk or whatever. And so I'll get in a rental car and I'll start driving. And all of a sudden I got pulled over actually once by a highway patrol. And he goes, hey pal, you don't have your lights on.
I did too in a Fiat 500.
Yeah. And I go, what? And I go, oh, it's a rental car. And I said, I'm sorry. He goes, oh, it's a rental car. He goes, okay, well, that makes sense. You know,
yeah.
I think he was thinking, are you drunk or whatever?
Drunk.
Then it was like,
you must be an owl or something.
And then he goes, hey, aren't you that guy from Shift and Stare? And I go, I am. I didn't want to say anything. And he goes, Aaron Hagar, right? I go, yeah, that's
me.
Yeah, I stopped dyeing my beard.
So overall, nice truck, a little bit more acceleration.
Listen, overall, nice truck, and I like it. But honestly, I think a lot of people that have them kind of wish the V8 was still there because at the end of the day, they're not really getting a huge fuel savings. I think they're looking at stiff competition when you're looking at what you know is coming from, you know, Chevy and Ram and and Ford. It's a tough gig.
That interior's nice, man. I'm looking at the photos now. Does yours have that camo style and cloth in the middle or?
Yeah, it does. And it does on the exterior, like the black, like fender flares. When you look up it close, it has kind of the camo exterior to it.
And on the tailgate, it has it.
Yeah, it's got some cool.
That's the one I saw.
Cool features for sure.
I'm not a camo fan, but I got to say this thing is really cool looking. That interior is gorgeous.
Yeah, that tone on tone is pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is. It's a nice touch. Wow.
And the center console is huge and the dogs sit there and they look out the window.
Yeah, that's what Pester does too. He's all perched. You know,
Henry especially. That little dog just sits there and loves to look out the window. He gets into his spot. He's ready to go.
They were good in the Mini Cooper. That they didn't do any of that in the Mini Cooper.
I mean, tried to get up. Like the little one, Toby, tries to get up and sit with the driver. But he tried to get up there, but we told him no, and he was fine.
No.
You know, speaking of the Mini Cooper too, I got a quick funny story. I was driving the Mini Cooper last week at night, or no, I'm sorry, in the middle of the day, and I had my lights on because, you know, the Mini Cooper, it's small. It's a real Mini Cooper, folks, so it's small. And there was this lady walking on the other side of the road facing me. And so I kind of pull like to the middle of the road away from her to give her a little extra room. And because it's right next to a golf course, I'm just being polite. She's probably in her late 60s, and she has her hands up like this, right? Like I'm blinding her. And I'm thinking, it's the middle of the day. I'm in a Mini Cooper, which has lower lights anyway, because it's a Mini Cooper. And as I get closer, she starts waving at me, like, turn your lights off. And I'm like, seriously? And as I run past her, I'm looking at her and she's like totally devil eyeing me. Like, how dare you? And I'm thinking, are you serious? Like, what do you have? You know, Coke bottle magnifiers on that it's just burning a hole in your head.
Besides, your
brights on my 1970 Mini Cooper are too bright for you in the middle of the day.
Which are put out less than like a new flashlight, you know?
Right. I mean, exactly. And they're shining on her knees.
Yeah. I've got lighters brighter than that. Yeah. You know?
Are you sure there wasn't a truck behind? Was Brad behind you in the truck?
Yeah,
it was just me. And it's not like
it had her car waxed and it was reflecting off the hood. Yeah, you know? I mean,
well, it wasn't like the sun. I'm trying to think. The sun would have been to our left, like late in the day. It was late in the day. You know, it wasn't dark. It wasn't even dusk. It wasn't even. I mean, it was daylight still. But the sun would have been to my left, so. Could it have been reflecting off the windshield maybe? And she was seeing my windshield like was too bright. Like that's the only thing I could think of. Of course, I was thinking it was my lights and I've been telling that story all week, but looking at it right now with you guys, I'm like, well, maybe something was reflecting off the car that was really bright, like the windshield.
It's just another crazy person.
Maybe she was just having a bad day,
dude.
No, but she I told my wife too. My wife was like, maybe she was crazy. I said, well, she wasn't dressed crazy. She didn't have like shoes hanging off her earlobes or something. You know, she seemed to be dressed normally, put together. You know, an older lady.
Yeah, but I was coming back from the factory a couple days ago, driving down the 91, and it was a lot of traffic. I mean, you know, that time of day, it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was bumper to bumper. And I'm coming up the right-hand lane because my exit's coming, and I hear a car horn. Just nonstop, not a beep, beep, just nonstop. And I'm looking around going, it was off in the distance. And I'm like, God, I wonder what that is, you know, because it just kept going and going. And so as I'm moving up the right lane, it starts getting louder and louder. And I realize, okay, it's somebody up here. I come up alongside this little Toyota Corolla. It was a newer one. And the first thing I noticed was it was coming from that car. And it was just, and I'm like, what, their car alarm gets stuck and they're trying to drive home or what? And then I noticed that every corner of the car had a, you know, like where it bounced off of something, right? Had been hit or it backed into something. Then as I get closer, the rear quarter panel has scrapes down the side where they scraped against something. And as I get up alongside, it's this woman, and like you said, Aaron, she was dressed professionally. Like she just got off work at a bank or something. And she is literally just sitting there in the second lane over, nobody cutting her off. Nobody, just her hand planted firmly on the horn, driving home. And I'm like,
maybe she didn't have a stereo.
I look over at her like, what the hell? And she just looks at me and just like, yeah. And I kept going, and as far as I she never let off. I'm just like,
maybe she doesn't have her hearing aids in. Maybe she just thought she was holding onto the steering wheel.
Maybe the airbag was about ready to come out from her last collision and she was holding it in, you know? I mean, it's like, I don't know.
Maybe she just likes an F sharp.
Yeah, right?
I'd never seen that happen before. And I was just like, wow.
Whoa. Yeah. I'm sorry. As I said that, I was typing in what key is a, like what pitch is a, is the, an automotive horn, and F comes up most of the time. Whoa. That was a wild guess, guys. That was a wild guess. I said F sharp, but I was close. F sharp. Maybe it's just
all right. we're going to end it on an F sharp today, not an F hole, like in a guitar. And, you know, making sure for those of you who aren't musicians, you know that an F hole is that F sharp. So, anyways, everybody. Hey, Matt, you know what I'm going to ask you?
Yeah. Sure. Check us out. I'm thinking .com.
Matt,
you know where the website is?
Is there a check in the mail for us? Yeah.
Is there a check in the mail? There's no check in the mail.
Hey, everyone, you can find Aaron Hagar at
fhole.com. Don't go to aaronhagar.com. I just checked my aaronhagar.com because I thought I owned it.
Yes.
It's a Chinese porn site, so don't go there. but you can find me at theratrunnersgarage.com or anywhere online at Aaron Hagar, except aaronhagar.com.
Anywhere but his name. And you can find me on Instagram at Bradley_Fanshaw. And if you go to bradfanshaw.com, this site comes up and it'll tell you all kinds of stuff about me, but you don't want to go there. So it's not a porn site. Trust me, not a porn site. And look at that. Yes, it definitely is. You know, you're famous when you put your name in and a porn site comes up.
A Chinese porn site. So I guess I'm global.
Yes, you are. So, all right, everybody, we'll be back next week. And that's a promise, not a threat. So thanks for listening to Shift and Steer.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com. We'll be right back.